from the EQC studio. Welcome to The Top Step with Ryan Mullen-Smith.
How we going, mates? Welcome back to another episode of The Top Step. My name is Ryan Roland-Smith. I'm inside the EQC studio. Special thanks to Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest. We have got an amazing show for you this week. Some really good guests. One of them coming up after the break is Mariners legend Mike Cameron. We're going to talk about what he sees from the team as of late, what he thinks about hitting this generation, all the hitting gurus online. We talk about that. And of course, we dive into some epic stories. I can't wait to have him on the show. Now, if you do want to watch any of my guests, uncut, full-length interview, go to YouTube. They're all over there. You can go to at the Top Step TV. Go click subscribe. Go like the videos. You can catch any of the past episodes if you're new to the show as well. Now, the top trends this week, something that I came across yesterday, was the power rankings. The Mariners have bounced all over the place. They've been 17th in the CBS Sports Power Rankings. They've been top 10. Right now, they sit at number 12. So check out this graphic. This stat this week is brought to you by ilovebaseball.org. For $39 a month, you can sponsor a Dominican player and give them everything they need off the field as well as on the field to make sure they get the right education and everything they need. Go to ilovebaseball.org and go see the amazing things they do. So the Mariners sit at number 12, so they're hovering around that playoff spot. And to help me out with some of these rankings and how he views these teams where the Mariners need to get to climb up those rankings is Matt Snyder. Matt, how you doing?
Good to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. Now, you've got the Mariners hovering around number 12. So tell me this. This is a weekly thing, right? These power rankings come out. You can catch it over at cbssports.com. You can see all of Matt's articles. Good one about injuries that I highly recommend. But you got the Mariners hovering at number 12. Have they, in weeks have gone by, have they been trending up, downwards? Where are they sitting right now compared to where they've been all year long, in your opinion?
All over the place. I think heading into the year, I feel like I had them around 10. It's hard to remember because I do it every single week, so I would have to go back and look. But I believe they were around 10th heading into the season. I believe that they are at minimum a fringe playoff contender. They're definitely a contender to win the AL West. They're definitely a contender to win one of the wild cards if they don't win the AL West. So I think they're going to be in that playoff mix all year. I believe, like I said, I had them around 10 heading into the year. Then they kind of a slow start, dropped down. I think maybe as low as 17, 18-ish. Yeah. Then they came back up to 10. Dropped them below the Twins after the Twins won that series. But, I mean, the Twins are beating everybody right now. So they're still right there. I mean, we are at the point where we have 12 playoff teams now. So if you're sitting at 12, I'm saying that you're a playoff-caliber ball club. So, yeah, things fluctuate a lot more in the early going because when I have to do these every single week.
Right.
And it's hard to get a read sometimes on teams where – they're playing different levels of competition. For example, when the Twins got really hot, we had to talk about, well, yeah, the Twins have won 10 in a row, but seven of those are against the White Sox, the other three are against the Angels. It's still hard to win 10 in a row no matter who you play, but we need context behind that winning streak. So it's tougher to slot them every single week early in the season, but I do it because for some reason it's immensely popular. It's usually the biggest hitter on our site.
To get into, say, call it the top 10, right, for the Mariners, what offensively, I said this yesterday, actually, I think when we were talking to you about this.
Yeah.
It's a situation where offensively, it wasn't like they were coming into the season being this juggernaut, but it's been really tough to figure out who they are offensively. But what do they need to do? What do they need to add, do you think, offensively to get them to that top 10? Obviously, the pitching speaks for itself. It's been amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like I told you on the radio, the biggest thing is once Julio starts to be the Julio that we know he can be, that elevates everybody around him. And it is unfortunate in some ways, but it seems like he might be, as I said on the radio, one of those slow starters like Mark Teixeira was, like Ryan Sandberg was, and like so many other guys, where it doesn't seem to start clicking for them until the middle of May or even late May, and then they become themselves. And that the good news is we know after 2 years the kind of player he is, that we're pretty sure he's going to become the Julio that he's been. So it's only a matter of time before it starts to click and he gets really hot. Maybe a little more power. I know the offseason they wanted to trade off, like with Teoscar moving on there, and the goal seemed to be to want to cut down on the strikeouts, but then they're striking out a million times again this season. So it's I don't know. It's interesting what the Padres did when they added Arraez. They have a lineup full of guys who are big on power, strike out a lot. They put Arraez at the top, who never strikes out, and he hits for a high average. It's really helped them kind of balance the offense. There's no other Arraez on the market right now, but maybe they could use somebody at the top of the order who is more like, I mean, not to this extent, but as in Seattle would be very familiar with, an Ichiro type, where not necessarily the power there, but you get an average guy. It's the average guys seem less prone to slump, to big slumps to me. Because if you're putting the ball in play all the time, it's going to find some holes.
Well, Matt, listen, man, this has been an absolute blast. I appreciate you joining me here on the Top Step, and I'd love to have you back at some point. Hopefully when the Mariners, when they're in the top five of the power rankings, we'll have to
maybe,
talk it over.
Maybe. It's attainable. Top four might not be, but top five is attainable.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they start swinging the bats like they're capable of. Yeah, we shall see. Absolutely. So, Matt, massive thank you.
I live in Tacoma, and I'm all about the action. From making a run at the tables to multiple pay lines on my favorite machines. Game time. The sportsbook is better than being on the 50-yard line or sitting courtside. I'm here for it. Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
The Top Step with Ryan Roland Smith is presented by EQC, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
All right, welcome back to the Top Step. We're inside the EQC studios, and I have a very special guest. He is a Mariners legend. He's played with eight different teams, but I feel like there is that connection to Seattle. It is none other than Mike Cameron. Mike, how you doing, buddy?
What's up, Rano? How you doing, brother? Great day, Mike.
I'm doing great.
Great day.
Yeah, there you go. There's an Australian coming out. I know you have been there. You did tell me before we came on. So I've got a little contest later on in the show that I'm gonna hit you up and see how well you go. But hey, listen, you play for eight different teams, but you are still very much connected to the Seattle Mariners, obviously from a coaching side, but from the fan standpoint, I get DMs all the time. I told you before I came on, hey, can you have Mike Cameron on the show? And I was like, oh, for sure, I'd love to. As a matter of fact, you hit me up on Twitter. I was like, oh, perfect, sweet. I don't have to be awkward asking him. So I appreciate it. But Mike, I want to ask you this. What is it with all the eight teams you've been with that has you've got that connection to the Seattle Mariners first of all?
First and foremost, I was here for the longest. I kind of felt like the span that I was here kind of etched my foundation, you know, in my baseball career. Also, getting traded for Griffey was very much so included in that. With all the mental skill helps these guys have now, I didn't have any of that when I first got to Seattle. I had to figure it out. But luckily, I had played a few years by the time I got here. We're kind of just really establishing myself by the time I got to Seattle. And, you know, here I am having to try to understand the establishment behind one of the top 50 greatest players coming into Seattle, and understanding that this man was at the height of his career in his prime in Ken Griffey Jr. And me coming here is just like, okay, I've had some success in the big leagues already, so I kind of understand what I am as a player, and that's about all I can do. But, you know, psychologically, that didn't really happen in that matter, because you're still trying to compete and play well, you know, for the fans in Seattle. And fortunately for me, I was in a good organization at the time with Pat Gillick running the ball club, and Lou Piniella at the helm, and still having A-Rod and Edgar Martinez on the team as superstars, and Jay Buhner, obviously.
Obviously they know you were traded for Ken Griffey Jr., but it wasn't like this. You see these trades all the time where, like, you know, this superstar, and you said in the midst of his career in Seattle, and everyone, you know, me as a kid, I knew Seattle Mariners, I knew Ken Griffey Jr., right? But like, you're already an established big leaguer, so there was that pressure of like, all right, you're taking his spot essentially, you know, on the field. Did you feel that pressure when you first got to the Mariners?
Oh, most definitely. I was Toronto. I got traded on February 10th of 2000. We're talking like 4 or 5 days before spring training. I was getting ready to drive down to Sarasota, Florida for arbitration. And, you know, I my name was kind of mentioned a little bit, but a lot more so from Cincinnati was Pokey Reese, you know, being the feature piece, I guess. Yeah. But, you know, it ended up being me. And holy hell, it was like a whirlwind. Everything transformed. I just had, you know, my son was at the time, he was 3. And I just had my daughter back in August. So of 99. So, you know, like I had 2 kids and, you know, just a budding big leaguer who had some success. You know, I had finished 5th in rookie of the year, struggled my second season, came back and had a 20-35 season in Cincinnati on a great team. A lot of young players with Aaron Boone, Barry Larkin, right. Pokey Reese, Sean Casey, Demetri Young, Jeffrey Hammonds, Greg Vaughn. So we had a great young nucleus when I was in Cincinnati and only to get traded to Seattle. And so I had to reassess myself.
Yeah, man. You know? You're saying it was at the time it was a nightmare, right? And then you, all of a sudden, instead of, I mean, you said you were driving down to Florida from where you were at.
I was heading.
Doing arbitrate. Like you kind of had that, like it was that, you know, that routine you used to, arbitration year, you're going to make some money, everything else. And then boom, you're on a plane out to essentially the West Coast, out to Arizona for spring training.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you got fans probably like hating the fact that who are you?
Yeah. Heck yes.
Oh, man.
I took it as much as it was hard to digest all of it, Ryan. I took it as like, okay, hey man, I can play this, like I can play this game, you know, like I ain't no scrub. I'm just kind of like, I'm not a 50 homer bat or a 45 homer bat or whatever it is, but I can do some things in this game. I've shown that I can do some things, and it was just a matter that me getting a chance to get comfortable, you know, obviously playing in that ballpark, it was tough. I mean, but other than that, I had A-Rod, I had Griffey. Yeah. I mean, I had Edgar, I had Olerud, I had Edgar Martinez, and then Lou Piniella. The first thing that Lou Piniella did was, one thing I will say, you know, because my experience with Lou Piniella when I played with the Chicago White Sox was them always kicking coolers, cussing out pitcher, everything, you know, playing in the kingdom or whatever. So, and I just didn't know. I didn't know what it was like. But man, it turns out that Seattle was like my second home. Like, you know, my kids cried when after 2004 or after 2003 when I wasn't able to come back. I was at the height of the most winningest times there, losing three Hall of Fame players in Griffey, well, Randy Johnson first, then Griffey, then A-Rod, man. Like, to lose that?
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
It's so crazy. So crazy.
So, Lou Piniella, answer me this. There's some things I want to get to because about today's game compared to, you know, back when you played, especially on the hitting side, because you're very vocal on social media. I'm going to get to all that. But Lou Piniella, right? Go back. Now, how would Lou Piniella go managing teams today? You're around baseball. You're around Major League Baseball. How would that look?
It would be tough for a lot of guys, man. You know, Lou was essentially a hitting coach, manager, everything. He was the data. He was the analytics. And he also was the guy who was your worst critic even while you're playing the game. But he was very good because he'd been around the game so long, he understood, he'd been around so many great players. He was a tenacious, like, hitter and played in some of the craziest times in New York City. But the guy was very, very smart as a manager. He knew what buttons to push with different guys, but he was, for me, more than a physical presence, far as a hitting guy. He was such a very good mental aspect. And we were sitting in the clubhouse after the game was over and we'd be talking about different things. And like, that was when I was able to absorb and learn so much more, with Lou at the time.
So he had that. So he had that part of him that he would sit with you and dive a little deeper, because what I'm saying is, obviously, look, really smart. Everyone loved him. I mean, working on Root Sports, I remember they used to say the whole post game was just him being interviewed, because that's all anyone wanted to see.
Yeah,
because it was entertaining. B, he was super smart. But he had that about him where he could sit in a clubhouse with you and dive deeper in regards to that point where you can trust him, where you can sort of open up to him and talk about different parts of the game. He had that side to him too, right?
Definitely. I mean, as tenacious as he was in the dugout, man, he was a field general. I mean, he was a little legitimate field general. He was boisterous. He was very kosher when he said certain things. I mean, I respected the hell out of him because as much as he got onto me, he was very, very comforting also. I mean, there are times though, man, he'd be like, really? Man, get out of my face, dude. You know, but he was cool though. We were good.
All I heard from a pitching side is he hated pitchers. Like, he just hated them. Like, if you threw, there's, I'm not going to name names here, but there's a couple of dudes who made their debuts, right? Like, one of them was a couple scoreless innings, and then goes 2-0 on someone, and you can hear him in the dugout yell.
Yeah.
And then you walk someone, and then you just hear his noise. He's like, oh man, that's right, I forgot. He hates it when pitchers walk.
Oh man, you just never know. You never knew what mood he was going to be in, dude. Like, bro, we were good, and he still was wanting so much more. Like, we were so good. Like, our team, obviously, the first year, when we had A-Rod, that was kind of my connection to Lou, because A-Rod was like Lou's son in a sense, it's
really,
yeah. So me and A-Rod got along very well, and A-Rod was a very big studier of the game, in hitting. And obviously he got a lot of that from Edgar Martinez, but having, A-Rod and Edgar and having Lou create this little miniature bonding moments in the clubhouse after he's had his couple of heaters and a couple of drinks, and he's still kind of he's trying to figure out the next day. But he was so good at explaining the game in a sense, and so I got a chance to see that side of him much more than the craziness that we see in the dugout a lot of times, because he was competitive, man, so he wanted to win so bad. And I could go on and on about Lou's stories. Look, this man used to get mad we lost 2 in a row, 3 in a row in spring training. And we're talking about gas and spring training. You don't got your team out here, bro. This is a kid. It didn't matter. It didn't matter, bro. It didn't matter. Dude. Right?
Is the game today, is it missing some of that too? I mean, I responded so well when I had managers. I had Kirk Gibson when I was with the D-backs. He was not, dude, I couldn't get a bunt down. And I'd come in the dugout and duck. He was so angry, And I'm like, dude, I don't know what I'm doing out there. I got, Tim Hudson just throwing turbo sinkers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's no chance I can bunt that. And then spring training, dude, the pitchers, he'd walk over and this is, he's coming off a knee surgery and had a shot, back spinal fusion. He's walking around, barely walked, and he's hobbling over. And we're doing PFPs, and we're like, oh damn, here comes Kirk Gibson. We had to sharpen up, get the water bottles out of the back pocket. But it was good. I loved it.
Is
the game missing some of that? When it comes to that kind of that type of leadership? What do you think?
I would like to say that it is, but in this day and time, the sensitivity of so much, and we have this new thing with the mental health concept that I don't think that would be allowed today, because the anxiety that the guys have today, that we had it and we found a way to channel it, I don't think it'll be allowed in that sense of what's transpiring, especially in the day of mental health, in the mental health capacity in the league and stuff, what is taking place in today's game.
I live in Tacoma. and I'm all about the action. From making a run at the tables to multiple pay lines on my favorite machines. Game time. The sportsbook is better than being on the 50-yard line or sitting courtside. I'm here for it. Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
From the EQC studio, welcome to the Top Step with Ryan Mullen-Smith.
Now listen, before I let you go, there's so much I want to get to, but we do have to get to this. We have got, now I've put you on, I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. I did give you a bit of a heads up, and plus you have traveled to Australia, but
yeah,
we do have a contest online, but you may get this one. So if you get it, I'm sorry, everyone on social media, you're not going to be able to win the prize. But yeah, okay, so we've got the How to Speak Australian contest, with Mike Cameron is going to be the contestant today. He has been to Australia, all right? So he has been. Now, this is brought to you by the Kangaroo and Kiwi, the only, or the one and only Australian pub in Seattle. If you want to go have a beer with your mates, go to the Kangaroo and Kiwi. It's in Ballard. Mike, have you ever been to the Kangaroo and Kiwi?
I haven't been there. I haven't been. I haven't been to the. Yeah, in Ballard, I definitely haven't been there.
Yeah, it's a great spot, man. It's a great spot, and I love it. Brad, who owns it, he's the man. A bunch of Aussies in there. A lot of cool Australian stuff. All right, the How to Speak Australian. The word is sanger. Mike, what is a sanger? And I'll give you a sentence if you need some help.
Please give me a sentence.
Oh, okay. So I was waiting for you, dude. You've been to the Gold Coast. I was expecting you to go boom. All right. I'm pretty hungry. I'm going to give this away here. I'm pretty hungry. I'm going to have a Vegemite. I feel like a Vegemite singer.
Vegemite sing. Sandwich?
Sandwich. Boom. There we go. And you've won it. All right.
Are you serious?
A sandwich. A singer. Yeah. No one ever said singer to you on the Gold Coast in Australia or what?
They probably did. But like I said, it's been a while.
Yeah. A sanger, yeah, that's right, a sandwich. So like, it's still like, oh, growing up, it's like, oh, I'll just get a sanger for lunch. And even now, I'll go back to Australia. I was back there over Christmas, and just boom, the words come back. I'm like, oh man, everyone's still saying that. That wasn't a thing when I was a kid. So yeah, no, a sanger. So that was the How to Speak Australian segment, brought to you by the Kangaroo and Kiwi Aussie Pub. We are going to have a live watch party at the pub later on in the year, and I'm gonna have to fly Mike Cameron out. He knows the word sanger. Well, Mike, this has been awesome, man. I would love it if you could come back on at some point
anytime
as we get into this season. But it was fun, and hopefully, are you up in Seattle at all coming up?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, dear. It's about to be summertime, okay, man. It's about to be summertime in Seattle. Definitely.
We should do this in person, man. Have a dive in, because I've still got a whole page of stuff I want to talk to you about. But anyway, we're running. I don't want to keep you too long. But yeah, this has been a blast, Mike. I really, really appreciate it, man.
All right, Rhino. All right, Mike.
All right, that's all the time we have for this week. Special thanks to Matt Snyder at CBS Sports for giving us the power rankings, and special thanks to Mike Cameron as well. Now, if you do want to watch these interviews full length, go to YouTube, go to at the Top Step TV, go click the subscribe button. You can catch all the past episodes as well. Go eat yourself a sanger. All right, mates, we'll see you next week right here on the Top Step.